Penguin Random House Audio presents How to Kill Your Best Friend by Lexi Elliott. Read for you by Elle Potter and Jane Collingwood. For Lee. With assurances that I have never considered killing her. And for the Swim Trek gang. And again and forever for Matt, Cameron, and Zachary. How to Kill Your Best Friend. Method 1. Accident. Yes, but what kind of accident? It's so easy in the movies. A pleasant walk along a cliff top, then bam, a sudden shove. In real life, there's no handily accessible cliff, and if there was, nobody in their right mind would walk so close to the edge of it. And supposing, just supposing, those two obstacles were somehow resolved, there's always the chance that somebody would see you. A dog walker, probably. There's always a bloody dog walker around. It's just like they say. It's not the murder that's the problem. It's getting away with it. No, wait. The murder is a problem, too. Chapter 1. Georgie. The hotel is beautiful. Of course it is. It topped the Condé Nast list of the best small hotels worldwide, but that barely registers with me because I'm late. Hideously, terribly late. It's not my fault. The plane was delayed, and it took forever for the luggage to be unloaded, but that hardly matters. All through the teeth-clenchingly slow 2-hour journey from the airport, I've been fervently hoping that something might have delayed the start. But now that I'm here, spilling out of the cool taxi into the hot, humid reception area, open on all sides to allow any breath of wind to waft through, I'm abruptly aware of how slim a hope that is. There's a smiling woman, local in appearance, waiting for me by the enormous bamboo sofa. There's a tray laid on the table in front of it with a moist towel and some kind of tropical drink complete with a cocktail umbrella. I cut off her welcome. Has it started? Oh. She's visibly startled. You're here for the, you mean Lissa? I nod tersely. But yes, it's started already. Where? Where do I go? Down to the beach, she says, pointing, her own gaze following her finger. Then she looks back at me, and her brow furrows in consternation. But, ma'am, I'm already rushing past her. I'll check in after. Hold on to my bags, please, I call over my shoulder. But, ma'am, she calls after me. I don't stop, though. Because I'm late. I'm late, I'm late, I'm terribly late. The reception area is set up on a hill. I hurry down the charming but steep stone steps, pushing my sunglasses back up my nose repeatedly and bemoaning my precarious wedge sandals, with barely a glance at the azure blue of the sea, shimmering in the late afternoon sun. The path twists and turns as it picks its way through the tropical foliage. I can't see the beach that it's surely about to spit me out onto, but then I turn a corner and the horseshoe-shaped cove is laid out before me. The cliffs near the mouth drop straight into the sea, but in the main belly of the cove, there's a beach, some 30 meters wide at this tide, and perhaps 100 meters long. Set out in the middle of it are rows of chairs, with an aisle down the middle. Next to what I can only imagine is the priest, I see the unmistakable figure of Jem facing the 60 or so attendees, his sunglasses hooked on by one arm at the open neck of the white linen shirt he's wearing. And then a breath of wind takes the skirt of the lightweight halter neck summer dress I'm wearing, black, but scattered with scarlet flowers, and streams it out sideways, as if a flag. Jem's head turns toward me, and after the merest of beats, he lifts his hand. It's a small gesture, but nevertheless, the priest tails off, and most of the crowd turns reflexively, and I realize with dawning horror that every one of them is wearing white. White. All of them. Jesus. It looks like a fucking wedding, not a funeral, I think. Jem could be a groom waiting for his bride. A wave of nausea swells inside me. I stamp it down ruthlessly. This is not the time to fall apart. I force my shoulders back against the weight of all these pairs of eyes and walk deliberately down the last few steps, ignoring the mutters I can already hear, my scandalous black and scarlet cutting a path straight down the aisle, which is thankfully paved by wooden slats. White linen shirts, white sundresses, white wide-legged beach trousers. How did I miss that detail? There are one or two pairs of pale beige tailored shorts, but other than that, everything is resolutely snowy. Behind my sunglasses, I'm searching for Bronwyn or Duncan, who will surely be near the front. I spot Duncan's height first, in the second row, with Bron's wayward chestnut curls next to him, barely reaching his shoulder. As I get closer, I see that Jem means to step forward to greet me before I can duck into the row, and I can't think of a single thing to say that is worth saying.
"You made it," he says,
reaching out with both hands to clasp mine. I haven't seen him for months, actually, over a year, not since the last time all the gang got together for one of our regular swimming holidays. Except, no. That wasn't the last time for everyone else. The last time was when Lissa drowned, but I wasn't there. For once, he looks every second of his 40-plus years. His mouth is smiling, but there's no energy in it, and his pale green eyes look worn. It's as if he's pulled on the suit of his skin and found that he doesn't quite fill it anymore. "The plane was delayed. I'm so sorry," I murmur inadequately.
"No matter. You're here. She would have wanted you here."
"Hardly. Nobody wants their funeral at 35. She wouldn't have wanted this at all. She would have wanted me to be there that night, to stop her from going for a swim alone in the dark. But I wasn't." I squeeze his hands mutely, then let Duncan pull me into the row, my wedges sinking awkwardly in the sand.
"Quite an entrance, as usual," he mutters as I squeeze past him to a chair next to Bron.
Her eyes are puffy, but then all of her seems puffy. I can feel the give in her waist as I slip an arm round her and pull her against me. There's been gradually more and more of Bron over the half of my lifetime I've known her, and less of Lissa. And now there's nothing left of Lissa at all. Bron catches my eye as the priest starts up again.
"Making a statement," she murmurs quietly, gesturing at my dress. What on earth would that statement be?
"I didn't get the memo." Her eyebrows lift briefly. I'm not sure she believes me. To her, I'll always be the girl she first met, or a mere step away from that. Careless. Reckless. With myself and others. A bullet ricocheting. Maybe she's right. Maybe I'm the one fooling myself. Perhaps one step is all it would take to fall back into that. Today, that step is perilously tempting. "Focus," I tell myself. "This is not the time to fall apart. I have to hold up Bron." She is crying now, as silently as she can, one of my hands gripped tightly in hers. There's barely a breath of wind on this beach,
and we are entirely exposed to the tropical sunshine.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?